Welcome to the Ike to Gone.
What's up, everybody? Ike Feldman here from IkeToGone.com. Thank you guys for all the feedback, the downloads, the subscriptions, the likes, the retweets, the hearts. Thank you guys for all that. Happy birthday to everybody that celebrated a quarantine birthday. I commend you on that. My birthday's in February. I got to go play ping pong and go play pool with my brothers and drink like an idiot. But I'm sure it's got to be awkward, but just try to make the best of it. And I salute you guys. I also salute and hope that everybody is safe, happy, and healthy. And whatever you're trying to express to the world, I hope it's safely, and I hope it is something that isn't causing harm to others. Again, just do what makes you happy. Express what you have to, just as long as you're doing it in a healthy, respectable, and honorable way. My mother always says this, and it's obviously a known saying. She didn't coin the term. She didn't coin the term either, but the term or phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword. Each year and every new good or bad experience, I'm learning more about how to express and communicate my thoughts and feelings a lot more fluently and coherently and with less aggression, because where I'm from and how I grew up, you do things with right hand Randy and left hand Larry, and maybe that's a little caveman like, and you can't always bench press or knock your problems out. Sometimes you got to express it with emails and pens and words and conference calls and verbal communication, which I am getting better at. So, the pen is mightier than the sword, as I'm learning. But the UFC fighters have to realize that. And I think they are, for themselves. I think they're realizing that if they want change, personally or unilaterally, I hope that word fits there, if they want change, they need to use the pen and not the sword. And this comes from people who put everything on the line and sacrifice tooth and limb to make a living for their family and change their futures. But when you see John Jones, Jorge Masvidal, Henry Cejudo, Conor McGregor at the same time, like all the moons came together and shifted together, and they all want their money, they all want to get paid at the same time, it kind of caught Dana on its heels, especially that he's put out a lot of fires with government officials and ESPN officials to get the UFC back and make fighting great again. And it caught him on his heels because all these fighters are coming at him at the same time to ask for money and ask for what they deserve. And I just hope the fighters can be smart. They are smart, but can they express themselves in an intelligent way and not bash their head on the wall, figuratively speaking, I hope, and not kick down Dana White's office, figuratively, I really hope, and grab a hold of Dana White, figuratively, I hope, and express themselves that it's time to get paid. Why is Deontay Wilder getting paid more money than John Jones when John Jones brought in more pay-per-view buys than Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury, the rematch? John Jones wants at least half of what Wilder's getting, which is $15, $20 million plus. Hey, he's spoiled. What is he doing? Hey, he's fighting three times a year. Hey, he's doing a more dangerous sport than boxing. Or there's the potential danger is a lot worse. There is a whole argument why MMA is safer than boxing. especially because of leg kicks and takedowns and jiu-jitsu and blood chokes, which have nothing to do with head trauma or concussions, but that's neither here or there. That's a different discussion. John Jones, Conor McGregor, who has been paid a ton. Henry Cejudo, two-time Olympic champion, two-division UFC champion. Jorge Masvidal, 2019 UFC Fighter of the Year. Who else is there that's not happy, that's disgruntled? Obviously, Nate Diaz has always been disrespected by the UFC, but it is disrespect. And the UFC and WME and IMG and Ari Emanuel need to show the fighters more respect. And in my opinion, this is a win-win situation for the fighters, and all fighters, in my opinion. Those four guys, Cejudo, Masvidal, John Jones, and Conor McGregor, how to forget Conor. Them all getting paid, obviously those are all pay-per-view fighters. By them getting paid, the money trickles down to the other fighters in the card. And with all Conor McGregor's success, fighter pay has been increased. The UFC's company was sold to a more legitimate company who can handle demands and promotion internationally in WME and IMG, which is, I believe, the biggest sports agency in the world. They better be if they're shelling out $4 billion for a fight organization. But Conor McGregor also brought the UFC, not on his own, but he really, really helped in bringing the UFC to ESPN. And the original contract for UFC on ESPN was 5 years, $1.5 billion. The UFC and ESPN eventually renegotiated to add 2 more years. So if the math continues, it's about $2 billion for 7 years of broadcast rights. And I think that maybe shared advertisings. Maybe the UFC handles all the gate. I'm sure there's some deal. But the people who are getting the shaft in this deal are the fighters. 18% for revenue that the fighters are receiving from the overall revenue is bad. It's really bad. It's extremely disrespectful, especially when you see hockey, NBA, MLB, NFL get paid north of 40%, 45%, some leagues 51%, the players, because they realize the leagues, the games, the money can't flow if there's no excellent players. Go watch Canadian football and tell me you don't need the players. You need Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley. You need the players to make the league. So pay these guys more than 15, 17, 18%. Make it 30%, 40% as a starting point. And I don't want to hear that there's money that the public isn't seeing. That's not good either. That's under the table. You're keeping certain elite fighters happy. And I believe this is Dana White's model to keep everything incentive-based. If you hang bonuses over the top of these fighters, and fight bonuses and show bonus is not the same as a win bonus. It should be a total what you make for showing up in the cage. You're going to fight. You're going to try your hardest regardless. If you don't, you don't deserve to be in the UFC. So incentives for these guys is just ridiculous. The incentive is to win and stay alive and be the best fighter you can and make Conor McGregor, John Jones, Khabib Nurmagomedov type of money, Floyd Mayweather type of money, Canelo Alvarez type of money. So things need to change. And I talk about that and a lot more with my boys, Andy Sukhoff, and my other boy, James Corrigan, who is not a New York native. I thought he was. And I prefaced the interview or the roundtable discussion as if he was a New York guy. But my apologies. He is a Jersey guy. I respect you too, Jersey. So we had a tri-state thing going on. Andy from Connecticut, your boy from New York, James from New Jersey. So I hope you guys enjoy it. What's up, everybody? We're back talking MMA in the Octagon. Obviously, I say MMA, but we all know it's mostly UFC talk. We are joined by the new dude, James Corrigan. No more beard. The beard is somewhere in the New York sewage system, but James Corrigan.
Oh, New Jersey
sewage system. But you look fantastic, James. Great to have you back. Andy Sukhoff, a good friend of mine. We should get after it on the softball field eventually. That's for a story for a different day. But Andy, as if people don't know, you are a huge advocate and a huge fan of MMA, and I appreciate you for joining me on the Eithagon, man. This is exciting.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite. Thank you, man.
No problem. And all transparency, Andy is multitasking. So, Andy, at any point, if you can't hear half a question or you can't fully answer something comfortably, just throw it back to us, man. Me and James always have a lot to say. So,
all right.
And we will be joined by a fourth member, Brian Fonseca. Hopefully, I'll be reaching out to him possibly in the next 10 or 15 minutes while we're recording. But, boys, what's new? What's on your mind? I haven't seen the Bruce Lee documentary, Be Water, on ESPN+.
God.
I know. It's a bad look, especially for a guy who's doing an MMA podcast. But
hey, you call yourself a fight fan, and you haven't watched the Bruce Lee doc yet.
Can you guys give me a synopsis without spoiling anything that's like truly special about it?
The synopsis is that Bruce Lee was a badass who changed the perception of Asian people in Hollywood and in America, and set off the Kung Fu craze that eventually became a catalyst for MMA today. I think I would put him as one of the main founding fathers of mixed martial arts. You got Antonio Inoki in that mix, although he was a pro wrestler. You've got obviously the Gracie family. I would even put a guy like Minoru Suzuki in that mix, who the king of Pancrase, one of the first major shoot fighting promotions in Japan. But Bruce Lee is right there.
And I looked at it like the way think of the people he influenced, where he did a movie with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, had Chuck Norris I forgot which movie it was that they did their fight scene. But then they, during commercials, they would cut to various athletes talking about how Bruce Lee impacted their lives. Guys like Kyler Murray and, you know, modern day athletes that Bruce Lee's been dead 45 years, but his legacy is still felt all this time later.
Can you guys still dig in and watch a Bruce Lee movie today and like not just do it to be cool and tweet about something, but can you actually like tune in and say like, man, this is still entertaining?
Well, there's some corny stuff, I'm not going to lie, but
yeah, I think Enter the Dragons on Netflix. I watched that one night at work because it was like 3 a.m. and it's like, well, yes, corny.
If it fits into your time slot at 3 a.m, that's perfect.
But still, the fight scenes are still pretty entertaining.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, Dana White, now this came out when they were trying to sell Bruce Lee as an unlockable character for UFC 1 on ESPN. Dana White's like, yeah, if you don't, I think he's wearing like a Bruce Lee shirt while he's like promoting the unlockable character on EA Sports UFC. And he was saying what everybody's saying, I hope he believes it all, but he was saying that Bruce Lee is the founding father of mixed martial arts. And I don't know how much film he watched, but some fighters will even say that he's incorporating arm bars. He's got like the smaller gloves with fingers shown. So now that you guys seen the documentary, I hope they made some tie to modern day martial arts, and in particular mixed martial arts. Can you guys say that he is like on the Mount Rushmore of mixed martial arts?
Well, they didn't really make that direct comparison in the movie to modern mixed martial arts, but as I just alluded to, yes, absolutely, I would say that.
Yeah, as would I, because he took multiple different forms of martial arts that he had learned over his life and incorporated them into everything he did, as well as open his own studio. So he's got that pedigree.
And he's been a pioneer and dealt with a lot of crap, from what I've seen the movies and the speeches and his open seminars to show off some of his moves or present his style. Who would you guys say in modern day mixed martial arts, go from 1993, 1995, 1997, however, in the last 20, 30 years, who would you say is the closest to Bruce Lee nowadays?
In terms of
the martial
popularity
arts.
Or influence, yeah. in
whatever
shaping what we know as MMA?
Whatever you got out of the documentary, who, like, could you just pick up that Bruce Lee brain and put into a modern day fighter's brain and say, like, this is the new embodiment of a Bruce Lee, just martial artist wise?
From a cultural standpoint, from a popularity standpoint, is no one. Nobody comes close. From a fighting standpoint, from a standpoint of really buying into being water and, you know, being as being smooth like the water, but also as powerful, Israel Adesanya.
Oh, wow. Good call.
Is got to be the closest embodiment in terms of the fighting style.
Good call.
Of Bruce Lee. When it comes to cultural impact, there's nobody. And when it comes to influence on modern MMA, it's Hoyce Gracie.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, I mean, Hoyce Gracie is like the gold standard of what MMA as we see it now is. Like, that's the perfect answer.
Well, I'm going to one up James on the Israel Adesanya front. I agree with the Hoyce Gracie comparison. Anderson Silva, right? Isn't that the Israel Adesanya who he wants to be? He wore the yellow and black shorts. He was very playful in the craziest situations. So.
Yeah, but
give me a point on that. If we have like a round the horn type of thing, I'll take the. But what were you gonna say? James? Well,
mentality wise, Anderson Silva wasn't always there, but
it's true.
Skill wise, certainly you can make that comparison.
If Israel Adesanya, if he beats Paulo Costa somehow in the fall on Fight Island or however they do it. And then he beats John Jones in Vegas, Raiders Stadium, summer 2021. He pulls off the impossible. Is Israel Adesanya not only surpassing Bruce, excuse me. Freudian slip. Is he not only passing Anderson Silva, but is he in that Conor McGregor realm of skill, popularity, and leverage?
In terms of pop, I mean, we'll see about popularity. Skill, probably. But we are mixed martial arts fans in the mixed martial arts community. We are very quick to dub somebody the greatest of all time. Max Holloway, made two defenses of his championship, and he's the greatest featherweight of all time.
Joe Rogan pissed me off so much.
Other than the guy who defended his title through two promotions through 8 years without a loss and beat everybody, you know, everybody and their mother. Is the greatest of all time when they become. Now people, is Volkanovski the greatest? Byron Woodley, we're going to. Ike, you're the biggest culprit on that.
Okay, we'll get into it.
Byron Woodley, he's the second only to GSP. Well, there are major holes in his resume and in his fight game, but I even though I'll say this, it's still a young enough sport where. The greatest of all time. There is no true, dominant Michael Jordan type in most weight classes. But, if Israel keeps going the way he is, I mean, he's going to be the greatest. There's no doubt about it.
And because of the fact that most combat sports, you have so many different weight classes, there's a goat for every class. A guy like GSP and then, Mighty Mouse for He defended his title forever and ever. Then he gets traded for Ben Askren. Nobody ever hears from him again.
Good point.
Well, he has not lost yet in one.
Did you guys hear Henry Cejudo on with Rogan?
I actually didn't. I didn't, unlike you with Bruce Lee.
Joe Rogan, Bruce Lee, no comparison, man. You got to make time for Rogan. I'm just kidding.
I did see Henry Cejudo a couple weeks back on AEW Dynamite backing up Mike Tyson. In his brawl with Chris Jericho, he and Rashad Evans, and I think it was at least one other MMA guy there. But yeah, he was in the mix.
He mentioned AEW to Rogan, and Rogan just was like, "Huh? Is that what is that?" I was like, I know it's like a division down of WWE, but I was like, that's totally over.
Well, that itself is arguable. You could argue that WWE is a division down from AEW at this point. But that's a one for another show, which I'd happy to do. But
I'll have to do more research. But then let's stick with the two things, James, that you brought up. Because like you said, Max is all of a sudden dubbed the greatest of all time. You mentioned Jose Aldo. And then I'll throw in the third wheel to that. Conor McGregor, he beat both of them. Obviously, Holloway was young, but he didn't lose in the featherweight division. He knocked out Aldo in 13 seconds. Took Holloway into the third round the first time, the second round or third round, the second time.
Well, Holloway took him to a decision.
That's fair, too, as a 20-year-old Holloway. So who is the greatest featherweight of all time? And then we'll get into Tyron Woodley next. But let's start.
Jose Aldo.
Wow, okay.
And it's even more amazing because we now see Jose Aldo making 135 at his age with ease, which means that not only was he the greatest featherweight of all time, but this whole time he may not have been fighting at his natural weight class to even begin with.
Yeah, I heard for UFC 245 against Marlon Moraes, that was the first time he incorporated a nutritionist. It's like, damn.
The thing, I don't know if either of you guys have ever heard of the website whatifsports.com, where you can pick the website, you can take historic teams of any era and face them off against each other. So as an example, you could take the 1927 New York Yankees, okay, put them up against the 2004 Red Sox, see who would win. In this instance, if Jose Aldo could have done 135, prime Aldo versus prime Dominic Cruz before all the knee injuries, probably would have been a fun fight to watch.
Wow, that would have been for the greatest bantamweight of all time. A couple of years ago, they were rumoring the Cruz going up to 45, but all right.
Speaking of the greatest of all time.
You guys convinced me on Aldo.
Speaking of the greatest of all time, we can talk about someone who there is no debate about, and that's Amanda Nunes.
Thank you. I think she's at minimum top five, top four, male or female.
Wow. Yeah, well,
I'm going Anderson 1, GSP, Jones. Gracie and Connor, they're the same person because they're like such pioneers. And then I got to go Nunes 4, and then Gracie and Connor 5 or 6.
I don't know. I think we're ways away from judging an entire career. But in terms of who she's beaten, it's unbelievable. It's really it's gotten to the point where there's no one left unless Valentina moves up again and Nunes fights again at 135. There is nobody who can stand in here. And for Alicia Spencer is the perfect example. Spencer comes in after, fighting Cyborg tough, and there's just no chance.
Yeah. I don't like the Shevchenko fight. Everybody's pushing for it. Let Zhang and Shevchenko work something out. Nunes is about to have a kid. Nina Ansarov's hitting pads in the UFC countdown, and she looks like she's about to pop. I'm like, take it easy, girl. No roundhouses. So let Nunes take a lot of time off, maybe even end of 2020, maybe in a year, maybe. Like, just she's done everything. Wait for a new contender to develop. What's your thoughts on Amanda Nunes, Andy?
Well, and after watching that fight on Saturday, it's like she dominated from start to finish. I thought that Felicia Spencer corner was going to throw the towel in after the fourth round. When they let her out for the fifth, I couldn't – my jaw almost hit the floor. I was shocked. I give her a lot of credit for staying in there for 25 minutes and taking that kind of beating, because I know I couldn't. But she's dominated two divisions in the span of the last 4.5 years, taking down a huge list of stars in both divisions. That what does she have left to prove right now?
I will say this about the fight. It was not as bad of a non-stoppage, not nearly as bad of a non-stoppage as Colby Teixeira versus Anthony Smith. Like, Spencer was taking shots, but she was never hurt. And honestly, in the fifth round, she probably took the fewest shots that she took the entire fight. I think Nunes actually realized that she was up and that she didn't really want to deliver that much punishment. So she took her down at least twice in that fifth round, which she, of course, could do with ease. But, it could have been stopped, but it's not that crazy to me that it wasn't.
So are we all in agreement that just take some time? Or James, you're kind of pushing for the Shevchenko fight.
You can do it. I mean, she could take time off. Obviously, her and Nina Ansarov are about to have the baby, as you alluded to. But, you also want to make money. You're not exactly exerting yourself very much in the octagon.
You bring up a great point, though, about the money, man. Can they make UFC 250 free? I understand 249. That was literally stacked from start to end, and it's not huge marketable fighters. You make it just 250, make it free on ESPN, man. Like, it's just – there's nothing else to do. You can just – 700,000 people is the rumor that paid for 249. That could have been probably 10 million viewers. I'm sure if it's free, if there's nothing else on, if it's free and just, dude, the fights kept going and going and going. Everything got better and better and better. Like, that's how moments. Cowboy versus Pettis was on the end of the ESPN card. Francis Ngannou was the start of the pay-per-view.
Well, this, unfortunately, is a great lead-in into the financial situation with Conor McGregor and Jorge Masvidal, because UFC gets that flat fee from ESPN with every pay-per-view. They get, whether the main event is Conor versus Khabib or whether the main event is Nunes versus Felicia Spencer, they get the same flat rate, which now means that there is no financial incentive for them to pay Conor McGregor what he's worth or Jorge Masvidal what he is worth or others. And, you know, you look at John Jones, although he's probably not worth as much as he's demanding. It's ridiculous, $30 million, but that's a different story. But that is something that is going to have an effect, whether or not we see Conor fight again, whether or not we see Masvidal fight again, whether or not we see Nate Diaz fight again. He, in my mind, Nate Diaz is the third biggest draw in the entire UFC.
I've always thought it's like if one of the lower end guys complains about pay, nobody cares. Because I don't want to say nobody cares. It's like, okay, who are you? When John Jones says, hey, I'm not getting paid what I feel like I should be making, or when your top draws are complaining, that's when the higher ups start to pay attention, because they don't want to lose their cash cows, because they know that those are the guys that draw numbers, draw advertisers, and ultimately make the higher ups money.
And then the well-spoken Dana White has all the access to all the platforms going on First Take, man, and saying, well, they signed a 6-fight and a 7-fight contract. You're telling me we haven't heard Conor McGregor re-talk or renegotiate contracts after 189, after 194, 196? The UFC thought they had the leverage, but McGregor was saying, I've been doing all your guys' media. He goes, I'm not going to be your cherry at UFC 200. It's going to be on my terms. I feel that the fighters are feeling that they have a little more leverage, and they have. It's like that, but they haven't been unionized. In your opinion, and you kind of were saying earlier, James, that you don't know if Conor McGregor has been paid what he's owed. I don't think they want to pay him what he is owed right now.
Well, they would want to pay him. They would want to pay him if they were getting something out of it. So if the UFC was still distributing their own pay-per-views, they would pay Conor what he's worth, because they know that they would reap the benefits with the higher buy rate, and same for all the others. But now that they don't reap the benefits, they don't reap that higher buy rate for Conor, because they get that flat fee for every pay-per-view, they have no incentive. ESPN is the entity that should have the incentive to pay these fighters, but I don't think they really know it yet. In terms of what he's asking for, God only knows. Probably got to be 50 million or somewhere in that range, 40 to 50 million. You know, it's ridiculous, but it's insane. But he garners that kind of attention. 2.4 million buys with Khabib, that's Floyd Mayweather.
And what about you, Andy? What do you make of all this chaos?
I mean, it will come to a point where it'll come to a head where I think we will eventually see the fighters unionize. At least, if not the biggest guys, at least the rank and file. So that way they can get more per fight. Like we were talking about it last week, you know, a guy gets paid 20 grand to show up. You know, it's really not a lot of money. Then, unless you're fighting 4 or 5 times a year, where then, you know, it starts to add up. But, you know, for one time, it's really, really not much you can do with that.
Yeah, I think the model's broke. It's like, thank you for the people who laid down the groundwork. I talked to, like, Pete Sell, Long Island's own, and he trains under the Ray Longo and Matt Sauer team. But he was like, yeah, his first fight at UFC was 3,000. He was just happy to pay rent for like a month, maybe two. And he was not a bartender. He was a bouncer on the side. He would kill me if he heard that he was the bartender. But 20 and 20 nowadays is not enough, man. I need at least 50, 75, 80. And I talked to a casual fan who's an avid other sport fan, and he's like, what, $80,000 for one night to fight? He goes, they should be happy for that. I go, do you know how much training and sparring and wrestling and pressure goes into this?
Yeah, you're training full time. You're paying your coaches.
Exactly.
You're paying for health insurance. And you're paying for everything else. So you hit the nail right on the head in terms
of
taxes
in any state that you're fighting. So you got that too.
Yeah, and the Kung Lee lawsuit, is still pending. So depending on what decision is made in that could be a big moment in terms of fighter equity in the UFC if that decision were to come down. So
now, you mentioned earlier about Conor's big draw against Khabib and the $2.4 million. I was trying to see what side of the fence you guys lie on. Do you think this could be like the NFL? I mean, how many billions of dollars does the NFL bring to the overall revenue? Say it's $10 billion a year. How are they getting all this money? Is it from the commercials? Is it from sponsorships? Like, why can't MMA be free? Why does it have to be behind a paywall? I guarantee you a Conor McGregor fight will show you that the system's broken.
People are willing to pay. That's what all it is. People are willing to pay because you're willing to pay.
That's short-sighted, though. I think it's like, oh, we can actually – we get the money now. But it's like if you showed people Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson, man, or the fight before Henry Cejudo, yeah. It's like then you get new fans.
Title fights have been on television for
– Yeah, Demetrius Johnson. Demetrius Johnson.
Well, the first UFC on Fox in history was Cain Velasquez. Junior Dos Santos, and it did a huge rating. But a lot of that was a curiosity – rating, that being the first MMA fight in history on broadcast network television. UFC not just UFC, individual sports like MMA, boxing, golf, tennis, you name it. It's character driven. It's person driven. When you've got the NFL, it's a built-in
team. Golf? Golf is character driven?
Tiger Woods, people watched.
Yeah, but I don't know, personality-wise.
Tiger Woods, people watched. People watched Tiger.
Because he was excellent at his job. He was excellent.
That's part of the character. He was cold-blooded. He was clutch.
Amanda Nunes is the same way. She's clutch, cold-blooded, but she's not marketable.
That's it. That's character.
I look at it like football's been around for over 100 years at this point. So that's been passed down generation to generation. UFC is still kind of in its, like, that middle ground between first and second generation of fans, where maybe as time goes, it'll start to pick up where they get that big TV contract that, like, the NFL or MLB has that's in the billions, where they get all the biggest sponsors. But at the moment, they're not there yet because they don't have that staying power that the big four do.
Granted,
team sports, it's built in. If you have built in fans, you have built in interest because of the team concept. You don't have that in individual sports, which is why it's so dependent on the marketability of certain individuals like Floyd Mayweather, like Manny Pacquiao, like Conor McGregor.
So at the end of the day, are you just happy if John Jones, Masvidal, Conor, Cejudo, if they just get their money and they're paid more, so essentially it trickles down? Or do you want something a little more? I would be satisfied with the fighter union. So which side of the fence are you? Like, pay the elite, make the peasants, like the Sean O'Malley, have to crawl up to the top and take everything they work for and turn it into millions of dollars? Or should it just be a union? And Sean O'Malley's fight that just happened, I think he's on the Contender Series contract. He should have got $200,000 for that last knockout.
Sean O'Malley certainly didn't look like a peasant the other night. That's for certain. 2 years out.
That's what Dana White feels. That's how Dana White feels. If we keep it incentive based, we will get the true hungry champions. And I'm like,
you can do both. You can take care of guys while still giving them that incentive and paying the top guys what they are worth. Because as you mentioned, it does trickle down. The revenue that guys like Conor McGregor bring in,
yep,
are massive. Are massive enough that you are able to take care of others. UFC only pays 20% of its revenue to fighters. Think about that.
I didn't even bring that up. Like, isn't that screwed up, Andy? Like, I mean,
a lot of other sports. I'm a big hockey fan, so I've watched them lock out multiple times, and it sucks. But a lot of that comes over with revenue sharing, and it usually winds up, it's been in the past like a 48-52 split. It went to 50-50. I think it's a 51-49 now, where the players get 51% of revenue. So maybe the UFC can find a way to get a bigger split of revenue sharing. Like you said, it was like 20% now. Even if they go to, let's call it 35. I'll throw a number out there.
Double, maybe, yeah.
Maybe that incentivizes more people to at the higher level to make sure that the fighters get paid what they need to, and they get to reap in the extra benefits of getting those extra contracts.
Do you guys think? So I think there's five and a half years left on the UFC and ESPN contract. Will Dana White ride this whole, will he be on the driver's seat the whole way, or will we see like a Roger Goodell or an Adam Silver type of commissioner presence be at the forefront of the UFC's president?
It's all Dana, because Dana is not just the president. No, it's not just Dana is not just the president. There's a reason why WME IMG kept Dana White around after they had purchased the company. After Dana White got 10% of that $4.2 billion, Dana White has no financial incentive to be in the UFC anymore. But WME kept him around because he is not just a president. He is the mouthpiece. He is as much of a promotional tool as any fighter in the UFC. He is so valuable to that brand as a figurehead that there's no chance. You can't say the same for any other commissioner in any other sport.
Wow.
And in the Big Four, everybody hates the commissioner. People hate Gary Bettman. They hate Roger Goodell, hate Rob Manfred, especially with what's going on right now where the MLB and the MLBPA can't get their everything together. People at least seem to like Dana White. Maybe he may not always say the best thing or the right thing at the right time, but it's – whatever he's doing so far seems to have worked thus far into the ESPN deal.
Well, people hate Dana White too, but they pay attention.
It's true. He is the face of UFC. Yes. Like, it's not the fact when he's, and I appreciate the gamesmanship on Conor's part to put out that tweet like 5-10 minutes before Dana White's got to go to the media. Like, you guys see the documentary with the Notorious One? On Netflix, Conor McGregor documentary.
I saw like the first few minutes of it.
There's a scene where, do you guys remember Dave Scholler, the guy who was separating Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor in the cage the first time around, the shaved head guy?
Yeah.
I think he's something in the front office for 76ers right now. He's excellent at his job, obviously. But there's a scene where he's briefing Conor McGregor to test him like what a reporter would say before the Chad Mendes fight. And he's like, all right, excellent, Conor. Now what about this follow-up? And like Conor, of course, is like so media savvy. My whole thing is like, they're probably like, yo, Dana, you're going to get ready for war when you step on that podium, man. I haven't seen him that fired up and like backed into a corner. He's like, I'm on a pandemic. F Jones, F Masvidal. Dude, Masvidal was on SportsCenter in the middle of UFC 250. Kenny Mayne can't even like look in the camera. Dana White was just getting it from all angles. And that's why I kind of think he is excellent at his job, as Jorge Masvidal said. His job is to protect the UFC's brand and to protect the UFC's dollars. And I'm sure Ari Emanuel will probably be like, pay Jones, pay Masvidal. And Dana's like, all right, well, okay. He goes, but I'm still the guy that's getting screamed at by media. I think Dana White, if it comes another cyclical type of culmination of all these moons lining up, Israel Adesanya, say, next time, or Henry Cejudo comes back, knocks somebody out, he wants more. If one of these, like, circumstances happen again, I could see Dana White just – I can't see him being the guy forever is what I'm trying to get at.
Not forever, but, you know, there'll come a time. But not in the next 5 years. Not in the next five years. What he needs to do now is engage ESPN in terms of financial commitment to – putting on the best possible pay-per-view show, because it's ESPN whose butts are on the line here. They're the ones that now are going to lose money or make money in regards to how many people purchase these pay-per-views. So they need to get involved. Even who was it? Was it Connor that called out ESPN or Masvidal? One of the major fighters, you know, said ESPN pay up. They understand.
Yeah, it's so the original contract was for 5 years, $1.5 billion, and then they negotiated to get extra 2 years. So I guess that makes it $2 billion, if my math's correct. So yeah, I don't blame the fighters for wanting ESPN or UFC to pony up. I understand Dana White is the messenger for Ari Emanuel and all of UFC, but do you think anything changes after this? Like, I think Connor and Jones and Masvidal will get paid, right?
They're going to work something out.
Yeah.
I can't see Connor actually being retired. Nobody believes him, no. Obviously.
That's why I don't want people to take the smoke screens. I'm like, there's still an issue with fighter pay. But what are you guys' thoughts of Gilbert Burns stepping up? Like, is this an issue? Ariel Helwani says these fighters need to stop being gung-ho. And he understands, and I understand – I'm sure you guys understand it's in their nature to be gung-ho. It's the style of the sport, but they have to look out financially. I mean, he's saying Gilbert Burns, don't take a title shot. Don't improve the quality of your life. Don't essentially make pay-per-view points. It has to be Jorge Masvidal's spot. And it's tricky because we're not in Gilbert Burns' situation. So is it kind of the fighter who's jumping in, like, what was it? Darren Till jumping ahead of Colby Covington or Kamaru Usman to fight Tyron Woodley. Like, that should have been Covington's fight. This should be Masvidal's fight.
Jumping ahead, why would Burns care? He's getting the title shot.
Because
talk about honor and, oh, you know you're not good enough, so just step aside, you know. You're Gilbert Burns. You're fighting for the world championship.
Yeah,
and you're making a big payday. You're going out. You're going to be the main event of a pay-per-view. It's ridiculous. Plus, you just knocked out you just destroyed the second greatest welterweight of all time.
That's quotations.
What? You're saying you're going to admit? Oh, I'm not worthy to fight you, Usman. I'm going to step aside and let a real contender. Who says that? That's the dumbest thing that I've ever heard come out of Nate Diaz's mouth, which is saying something.
It's not the 1400s anymore. You know, there's no honor in fighting. If somebody offers me a title shot, guess what? I'm taking it.
Tomorrow, right, Andy? You're putting down the softball bat. You're jumping in the cage. That's a hefty payday.
They gave 46-year-old Dan Henderson a title shot. He was ranked number 14 at the time. Nobody complained.
Well, you're aging him and you're outranking him. I think it was 12 and I think he was 43.
Whatever it was. he was not the number one contender. No, let's put it that way.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Oh, man. It's crazy times. I mean, but then and I think that, excuse me, I think that was MMA Fighting's podcast that they did. I think it was Damon Martin and Mike Heck. They were talking about Gilbert Burns, like, this isn't your spot, basically. Ariel Helwani was hinting at, and guys, we got less than a minute, so just 20 seconds each real quick. Is this the perfect time to make Jorge Connor for the BMF title?
Yes.
I'm game.
All right, boys. What do you guys got going on? How are you doing in the pandemic? Life's starting to get going. What's – mm-hmm.
I've clearly gotten out of the house lately, so
I finally went to a bar the other day. It was very nice.
Get out. Was it outdoor seating?
Yeah.
All right, all right.
You promised a side-by-side comparison with me with the beard, so I better see that in the post-production.
Yes, yes. We'll get that going. Get that going, guys. Yeah, they're working on it right now. James, real quick, I'm sorry. You are a Jersey guy?
Yes.
I thought because you went to FUV. Yeah, because that's the name of the college. Yeah.
Fordham.
Because you went to Fordham. I thought you were a New York guy. So we can no longer be friends now. I'm just kidding.
Boy. You're going to have to live with it.
Oh, boys, thank you for the time. Again, James Corrigan, Brian Fonseca, Andy Sukoff. Guys, love you guys. Stay safe, stay healthy. Thank you again for the time.
Thank you, Ike.
There they were. Andy, James, guys, love you. Thanks again for the time. Maybe I'll shell out for some unlimited minute recording, but we do have time limits. And I don't want to talk to you guys forever. You know, I got things to do, like video games. I got to maybe, like, go for a jog or, you know, like, shower, maybe make some eggs. So I can't, like, work you guys fully into my whole day schedule, but maybe in the future. But I hope you guys enjoyed another Ike the Gon episode. Stay safe out there. Stay smart. Be careful with the word vigilant. You don't want to be a death sentence type of vigilant. Yeah, Batman is borderline vigilant, but just be smart in your efforts to change the world. And to the cops too, be smart, be safe, watch out, because there are idiots and bad eggs in every group. So just hopefully everybody stays smart, because the pen is mightier than the sword. See you guys later.